Welcome to the podcast of MotorWeek, television's original automotive magazine. MotorWeek is made possible by rockauto.com. Here's your host, John Davis.
Welcome to MotorWeek podcast number 79. I am John Davis. Thanks for joining us. And around our table today is our producer, writer, and two-wheeling reporter, Brian Robinson.
Hey, all right. How you doing?
Anything else you want to say, Ryan?
Well, I just wonder what else you could tack on there before my name. I don't know. Well, it seems like an awful lot.
He has the longest title of anyone on the program.
Okay. Seems like a lot to say. That's all.
And also our writer, researcher, Patrick Lucas.
A little shorter, but hello.
Patrick, thanks for joining us today. Okay, we'll have our lightning round, and we'll look at our mailbag in a few moments. But first, three vehicles that we have been testing on MotorWeek recently, and let's start with one that I think is fairly widely anticipated, and this is the redesign of the Hyundai Santa Fe crossover. And this time around, Hyundai is going in two directions with the Santa Fe. There'll be the normal five-passenger Santa Fe that pretty much replaces vehicle for vehicle, the previous Santa Fe, and then there's also an extended chassis version that'll be out a few months from now that'll have seven seats, and it is actually replacing the Veracruz. First reaction from around the table. You spent a lot of time in the Santa Fe. A good redesign, nothing special. What's your take?
Good, great, awesome.
Well, two thumbs up.
Wow.
I can see that.
Well,
there's
a butt, though. Okay. But, yeah, awesome redesign. Looks cool.
A little bit of that styling from the Sonata and the other cars into
exactly.
Not too much.
But at least the one that we drove, the 2.4, the base engine, well, it's not doing it for me. Just felt severely underpowered. And I just wasn't a fan. I really wanted to try the turbo.
Yeah, the turbo looks like it's going to be a more interesting choice. However, I guess I was disappointed because I was comparing it against the Chevrolet Equinox and some other stuff out there, even the Sorento.
Right, which it's based on, right?
Which it's based on. And they felt more powerful. And yet this particular Santa Fe we had did seem a little doggy. I don't know if it's that much heavier because it was loaded up with all the equipment, all the options.
I've had a love-hate relationship with the Santa Fe. The first gen was an incredible value, but it was just horrible looking. And the second gen looked a lot nicer, but the interior didn't seem as nice, and it was really clunky to drive. Well, this gen, it's kind of got everything going for it. It looks great. The interior is very nice.
Very nice.
The seats are comfortable. I didn't find it as underpowered as maybe you guys did. Mm-hmm. I was maybe expecting it to be a little more underpowered than it was, but I'm sure the 2-liter turbo would be much better, but
I expect this base engine will be the volume engine they usually are. Yeah. But overall, though, I think we were impressed with it, and think it's a very solid competitor in the compact. They call it, this is considered a midsize. The old ones were kind of compact, but now this is pretty much a midsize.
I lose track of what's compact and what's midsize.
The crossover area has become so confused because you've got vehicles that lengthwise and wheelbase-wise sort of fit into one classification, but yet they carry as much as something bigger.
Right,
that
the current RAV4 is like a 7-pack. You can get a third row in that, and that's a compact. So,
and the new RAV4 is just been shown, and it looks even bigger.
Right.
So anyway, I think basically Patrick gave you two thumbs up, and I think we all agree that the Santa Fe, the redesign, is a nice step forward. Not sure it makes them number one in the class in any way, but it's certainly an extremely competent vehicle. And when you tack on Hyundai's incredible warranties, it probably still a very good value.
Yeah, they do still pack a lot of features for the price. Maybe, you know, the prices are sneaking up, kind of catching up with everybody else as their quality has improved. But I'm sure it'll do well.
Turning now to our second vehicle, some months back we tested the first version of the all-new Chevrolet Malibu, and it was the Malibu Eco, and it basically had the light hybrid system that GM has been developing over the recent years, and it helps a little bit in fuel economy. It was a nice package. For the first time, I think, in a long time, we actually looked at the Malibu and thought it was competitive to Camry, Accord, and the rest, and the better midsize sedans out there, but we all pretty much came away just saying that, you know, fuel economy is great, but we really do wish they would give it a little bit more muscle here and there when they can. And we've all driven older Malibus that occasionally they would have a model that was not quite so mainstream. It had a little bit more guts to it. And lo and behold, we now have our second Malibu model. It's the Chevrolet Malibu Turbo. They've introduced that along with a base non-powertrain. And this Turbo is basically the 2-liter engine that's out of the ATS at Cadillac. It's got 259 horsepower and 260 pound-feet of torque. It's got more horsepower than anything else in its class that's made by a domestic manufacturer. And it's got more power than last year's V6. So, as we say in the open that we wrote for the show, does the Malibu Turbo really get a boost in our impressions, or is it still just spinning up hot air, or what? What do you think?
Well, you kind of got right into it when you said more power than the V6. When you hear turbo, you're expecting a performance car, and it's not a performance car.
It's basically not a sports sedan.
Right. It's basically 6-cylinder power with 4-cylinder fuel economy. That's really the story with the turbo. GM kind of has been doing this lately. They've been putting out cars with like the lamest possible engine, and then we review it and say it's a great car, and then they come out 6 months later with a much better engine that's kind of they should have had in the car all to begin with. But that aside, it's still an incredibly comfortable car, and it's
very quiet.
Yeah, very quiet. Good road manners. Again, it's not a performance sedan. But
a
overall,
huge step up, I think, from what they were doing for the most part.
Yeah, I mean, it does not feel as powerful as the numbers indicate when you drive it. I mean, you hit you said it's the same engine that's in the ATS.
Mm-hmm.
When you drive the ATS, I mean, that thing feels like a hot rod.
It does.
Here, I'm not sure if it's the trans is different or what, but it doesn't feel nearly as capable as the ATS.
Patrick?
I was very impressed. Yeah, it's definitely not a sports car. I wouldn't call it that. I don't think anyone.
Although
here,
it did very well. I mean, I looked at the track. You look at how it did at the track. It was very stable. The braking numbers were quite good. So, I mean, and performance wise, it was substantially faster, of course, than the Eco. But that would be hard.
Yeah, right? I mean, I think you definitely feel it on the highway. It was good, surprising amount of power on the highway. I actually liked it better than the Accord, which is one of its big competitors.
Really?
Yeah, I mean, I thought it was very comfortable inside. I took it for the weekend, easy to live with, easy to drive around, power when you need it.
It had the Chevy MyLink big touchscreen, which is similar to the Q system that's in the Cadillac. Any, you know, where you can hook it up to your smartphone and so forth. I mean, these things are still distracting, but any comments on how well you thought it operated, say, compared to some of its competition like Ford Sync and et cetera?
I'm the wrong one to ask. I don't even have a smartphone to link it up
right
with yet.
Patrick?
So.
Well, the whole touchscreen situation.
It's okay.
Situation.
I mean, it's not a big screen compared to some other competitors. I think it's relatively small size-wise, but the interface, I think, is good. There's no, at least in our car, didn't have like a dedicated nav. You still got to go through OnStar. You can't pull up a map or anything, which is a little frustrating.
I was surprised they didn't offer. They're offering on the Spark that smartphone navigation system where you can actually get maps through your smartphone. I'd like to see that spread throughout GM. I'm kind of a little disappointed they didn't put that on.
Yeah, I like the MyLink system a lot, and I liked it in the Spark. This one was slightly different iteration. I felt a little older, to be honest. But, you know, it worked well. I do like having redundant buttons still below it,
which
is nice.
And buttons, not touch
exactly.
Bars.
Yeah. I was first talking about, for saying in GM, I don't like the Q system and all that nonsense in the Cadillacs.
Was it the fact that they just give you the touch buttons?
Yeah, exactly. You kind of got to
swipe it.
Exactly.
Yeah.
I don't really like that. I like buttons.
One negative on the Malibu, to me, was they built it this time on a different chassis. It shares this chassis with the Regal at Buick. It's a shorter chassis than what they had before, and they took that room right out of the back seat. And so many people buy these cars as family cars because of and want great back seat room. It's not that it's tight. It's just when you start comparing it to some of its competitors, it comes up a little short. And I guess they did it to save money, but I actually think that was a bad decision.
Yeah, and while we're on negatives and interior, I mean, the interior is definitely a love it or hate it affair. Outside more to the hate it. I mean, I like the overall layout But texture on the dash
Lots of different textures.
Yeah, and there's blue stitching in our car, which I guess is supposed to match up with the blue ambient lighting. But, you know, unless you drive it at night, you don't really get that effect. It just, nothing really seen. It's all individual pieces that are nice, but then they, to me, they just don't work together at all.
Everything GM has done on interiors in the last few years has been beautiful, elegant, and fairly simple. This is complicated. And I asked actually one of the designers why slats and different all these different colors and textures. And they claim that since this is a global car that they're going to be selling it, particularly in the Far East, that it was designed to meet their taste as well. So good or bad, I'm not. It is a competent car. Maybe they put a little bit too much thought into it in a few areas. I don't know.
Yeah, I really don't think you mentioned that you liked it better than the Accord, but I don't think Accord and Camry really have that much to worry about. I mean,
I'm just one guy.
I do think it's a real player, though. I think it's a car that can be considered with those without it's. No, I hate to say it. I think it's much better than the rental car aspect that the old Malibu had.
I think it is truly better, but I still think if the people buying it are wanting to buy an American car, and therefore they will buy the Malibu. I really don't see anybody trading in their Camry for one.
Or, for that matter, a Fusion or something else.
I would prefer the Fusion over the Malibu myself. Hmm. But.
Okay. Good try, GM. Maybe you need to work on it a little bit more.
We started off super positive, but ended on a downer.
I think it's a nice car. It's just that, these days, every car we get in is pretty impressive in a lot of ways. So one of the things that car testers are faced with is often you have to nitpick. And it may sound funny, but, it's like when you start dissecting the mid-size sedan class, there's so many great cars out there, it often comes down to some of the small things.
Yeah, and we complain about interiors a lot, and sometimes even I get annoyed with myself for doing it, but that's where you spend all your time.
Sure,
I mean, you can have a great looking car, but you're not going to be seeing what it looks like while you're driving it. You're spending your time inside. You want to be comfortable going to work and back every day, and you want it to be an enjoyable experience, not one that's constantly frustrating.
And if you can't adjust the stereo and the climate easily, then there's something wrong.
Yep.
I'm not saying you shouldn't even read the owner's manual. At least read the owner's manual. But if you do that and still got trouble, there's something wrong.
Well said. Moving on.
All right. Subaru XV Crosstrek. This is basically a Impreza Sport on steroids. When I first saw it in Europe when it was unveiled, I looked at it, and I said, what the heck's so new about this? It's nothing but an Impreza with a little bit more ground clearance. However, having now spent a lot of time with it, I can appreciate that it really is a little bit different. And Brian, why don't you take it from there?
Yeah, I almost laughed at it when I first saw it. I mean, it's got so much ground clearance, it's almost comical.
More than a Jeep Grand Cherokee.
Yeah, and it's definitely jacked up, which to me, I think it looks awesome. And the more time I spent with it, the more I liked it. It rides a little stiffer than the Impreza Sport that it's based on, but it looks tough. If you put some all-terrain tires on there, that thing looks awesome.
Patrick?
I love it, too. I think the wheels look cool. They're doing some cool paint colors on it. The only thing I found a little strange was it was literally, I know we're talking like it's just an Impreza, raised up. It literally is an Impreza inside.
They did not change the awful radio and navigation system.
I'm sure I'm wrong here, but it feels like they did not change a single thing in there.
Yeah, I don't think they did.
I think you're right on.
Yeah.
It's got the same powertrain, so it's certainly not a screamer, but it's more than adequate. I looked at it, and after I've driving it for a couple of days, it's like, I feel like I'm in a real off-road capable vehicle, not just an all-weather Subaru. And it reminded me of the Brat more than I think anything else, and maybe even a little of the Baja that both of those, of course, were pickups. So I don't know. I guess they're onto something. They're giving those fanatical Subaru buyers something a little bit different.
Yeah, they do come up with some quirky stuff that very few people buy, but then those few people that buy them are incredibly fanatical about them. But they seem to, find ways to steal some sales from themselves. I don't know that this car will, attract any maybe new Subaru buyers, but someone that was looking at an Impreza and, hey, here's this Impreza here that's got more ground clearance. That one looks cooler. I'll buy that one. So
I know when we took it to the track, we were surprised that with all that ground clearance that it didn't start wallowing through the cones, but it was the stiffening up of the ride really made it a very stable platform. And what little bit of off-roading I did with it, I thought that made it feel much more confident. You weren't basically rocking back and forth every time you hit the side of a ditch.
It had virtually no body roll at all, which was really surprising. Where did you do some off-roading?
Just a construction site that I wasn't supposed
right
to be
on,
doing.
Right on. Hey,
I can't
did we
tell
get
you.
That on tape?
No.
All right.
I can't tell you where it was. Okay, so we're basically pretty favorable on the Crosstrek. We thought it's a quirky little vehicle, I think is what we said in our test, but an interesting piece of work and something that I think they'll probably sell more than a few of.
Yeah, unless you really love the looks or really want the ground clearance. I mean, the Impreza Sport, is perfectly adequate as well.
Moving right along now, let's go to our lightning round where our panelists have 2 minutes to debate topics that are trending in the auto industry. And when time is up, they're going to hear the bell rung by our producer, Michelle Parker. Okay, here's the issue for the day. Many of us travel by car to spend the holidays with family and friends, and many of us bring our pets along. Our question is, for safety reasons, should pets be required to be restrained? This is, should pets be required to be restrained, whether by a seatbelt or in a crate while riding in the car?
Well,
this may be a difference between what you think should happen and what you do yourself.
Yeah, I'm not a pet person at all, and if I did have one, I would be a leave the pet at home kind of person. But having said that, John, you're the one that is definitely the most pet person at this table.
Well, I can
tell us what you do.
Every expert out there tells you that you should restrain your pets, have them in a cage or something else, because in an accident they can become very, in my case, large dogs, large, heavy missiles.
Projectiles
that can come right to the front of the vehicle.
So we're talking about passenger safety. What about pet safety?
Yeah. Well, pet safety, that absolutely goes hand in hand, because obviously you're restrained and they're not. And so you could have a relatively minor accident that the animal could be seriously injured. We've gone through various safety harnesses and stuff over the years. They are cumbersome. I won't claim that we use them all the time, but I think they are a very good idea, especially for longer trips. So my advice is that you're better restraining your pet all the way around. It's better for you. It's much better for the pet, and it's the way to go.
Whatever you do, don't put your dog on your lap.
Yeah.
Well,
that's
the other thing. I mean, there's a difference between having your pets in the back of a crossover and basically having them next to you under the steering wheel so that they can put their nose out the windows. And I really have a problem with that.
Yeah, Volvo always seemed to have the nice setup where they had the lift-up net that went above the back seat to the roof.
And that's
they had in a cage right there for them.
And that's what we had up until recently, our Volvo wagon, and we used that.
I'm not sure why
more
people haven't.
It was a great solution. It not only worked with pets, but it also worked with just for loose cargo. Because if you've got boxes sitting in the back, they also can become projectiles. I thought that was a terrific feature, and I actually have made over the years various out of snow fencing, or not snow fencing, but that yellow construction fencing, made barriers in my cars that would help restrain pets.
Well, a side job there. If you,
you can't quite drill into the roof like you'd like to. But I think it's something that's a good idea.
So,
I'd hate to see it required because we police so much stuff and we give policemen things that they should not have to worry about. I just think it's common sense to take care of your pets and yourself.
Should your pets be allowed to text while you're driving?
No, okay. Absolutely not. If I can't text, they can't text. All right. Now, this is another very good issue. This is a question from our Motor Week mailbag. And remember, if you want to submit a question to us, if we choose it, you will get one of our fabulous Motor Week t-shirts, which they really are very nice, pre-shrunk and all. So here we go. This is from Tom. Very good question, Tom. What is the lifespan of spare tires? Should they be replaced at certain intervals?
That's something I never really thought about, especially since I drive older vehicles. I probably should be concerned about it. But I think that one of the big things that degrades tires is just sunlight. I think they're in the trunk. I think as long as you – or under the vehicle. I think as long as you check the air pressure, you know, relative every year or 6 months at the minimum – I don't really see them wearing out unless you use it.
Yeah, that's exactly what our car care guru, Pat Goss, said. I called Pat to get his take on it.
Can I be the new car care guru?
I think so. I think you just got that crown. And he said that no one has ever set any particular standards or way to measure spare tire usefulness after aging. He said, you know, they there's no reason they can't last the life of the car, at least of 20 years. And the reason is just what you said. The biggest thing that deteriorates the compound on tires is ultraviolet rays. And because they're hidden and they don't get the sunlight, they tend not to deteriorate, at least not as rapidly. The other thing is, though, you've got to consider very carefully the limitations, he says, on these tires. Most of them say, don't drive over 50 miles an hour, which, of course, everybody does. Don't use it for more than 500 miles. I know people have driven thousands of miles on them. So the point is, you're more apt to wear the tire out by using it even occasionally, by going too fast in it or driving too far, than you are with it just sitting there in the dark hole underneath the floor or wherever. Pat? Any comment? Any experience?
Car care guru, Pat.
Well, I'm not Pat Goss.
Pat Goss. That's just Pat Lucas. It's kind of hard to go up against him. When Pat Goss doesn't have a definitive answer for something, you know, that's amazing. Shame on you for saying that. And that brings to a close our Motor Week podcast number 79.
Thank goodness.
Who knew that we were going to be doing so many of these when we first started this? And we started them because of our podcast creator, Bob Mixter, who was so absolutely adamant about how popular these would become. And thank you very much, everyone that listens, for making them so popular and an integral part of our series. Our audio engineer, David Wainwright, who's at the Post today of trying to keep us sounding clear and crisp. And our podcast producer, Michelle Parker, the lady with the bell. I better quit very soon because I can't talk. Thank you for joining us. Be sure to catch Motor Week on your local public television station and also on the Velocity Channel on your cable and satellite networks. Till next time, thanks for joining us here at Motor Week.
You've been listening to the podcast of Motor Week, television's original automotive magazine. Motor Week is made possible by RockAuto.com. For additional information on podcasts, videos, and showtimes, visit our website at MotorWeek.org. And watch Motor Week, television's longest-running automotive series, each week on your local PBS station.